Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tassel, Baltimore. We are international. We will be in this segment. I'll be giving away some Raven scratch-offs next week. We're hitting Coco's. I'm getting Costa set up. I got to get the Pizza John's because it's my birthday month. I ate my face off in August and September with the Tastiness Tour, courtesy of our friends at Curio Wellness and Foreign Daughter. Big thanks to them. We got Wendy on this week. I'm going to tell her about my hot air balloon fiesta. And my Hollywood Bowl experience with Steven Tyler and The Who, and all the fun I've been having lately in advance of my birthday. But the 1-5 football team is sort of broken spirits here. And even more than that, the baseball endeavor of just being an awful, awful baseball team. Because I'm like my wife's uncle, I am international. I have friends in other places, low places, high places, fun places, Canadian places. And there was some convergence in my life this week that I was supposed to go to Toronto. I was supposed to see Bryan Adams. I had a second row ticket in St. Catharines that I actually lost $30 on. I'm still trying to figure out how to get my loonies back in that. And I missed that on a Tim Horton donut. And I missed that on Toronto, which is one of my favorite places. But I did go to Albuquerque and I did this hot air balloon fiesta thing. And my pal Brad Gagnon, who is one of these people that I don't know how the hell I collected him in life. I know he got booked onto my show as a radio guest years ago. He's an NFL insider from Toronto, which is really weird because he was the guy pulling for Bon Jovi to get the Bills across the border. It didn't happen when he was a young man. He's been in love. He's been married. He's a parent. He's a business owner. He's a bon vivant. He's a little bit of a James Bond football character. He comes to us now from the state of São Paulo in Brazil, in Santos, where summer's about to kick in, as far as I can tell. But he is my Toronto running mate. We have done all sorts of things in Toronto together, eat noodles, drank beer, watch football. He is Brad Gagnon, and it's always a pleasure to have you on, dude. Said, I do the Wanderlust thing because I saw your pictures of you in Banff, and dude, that might be moving to the top of my bucket list. And you know why? Two things. It's Banff and it's in Canada, and Geddy Lee and Rush are going on tour. And oh my God, isn't it the greatest thing in the world, dude?
If you could pair Banff with, I don't think you're a hockey guy too, to see a Flames or an Oilers game in Alberta and then hit Banff, hit Lake Louise. As you mentioned, if Geddy is touring, you could have a real perfect trip opportunity to defect for a few days or a week or two up to Canada. Sorry we missed you when you were supposed to come up a couple weeks ago. I wasn't there anyway. You mentioned this is international, this is double international. You got a Canadian and Brazil. So I wasn't there anyway. Hopefully I'll make sure I'm there next time you come up. We always love having you up in Canada. I think you align politically a little bit more with us than you do down there sometimes. So no,
I love the Canadian people. You know, I love the Canadian people.
Absolutely.
I wore my F Trump cheap trick shirt front facing in Quebec at not Le Colisée, but at the new joint, and Pearl Jam played. And I wore it the whole night. And I tell you what, I didn't have to buy a beer. You know, up in Quebec. So, and I was at that show with Kenny Mayne, believe it or not, who I ran into in the plaza just eating lunch. He's like, "Hey, hey, Americans, hey!" Yeah, next thing I know, he's giving me a ride to the show, and Jeff Ament and Eddie Vedder are shouting him out. So, oh, Canada. It is the place I drink when I go to Epcot as well. You know, I drink at the Moosehead Stand in Epcot. So, dude, I love you. I miss you. I mean, we're wanderlust people. We're friends. We're football, baseball people. Let's start with this. And I want to get to football. But I began the baseball season in your burg. You were not there. Luke and I were in Toronto for opening day. The Orioles opened the season in Toronto. And I got to tell you, it was cold. I cut my foot open. I had a blister. I bled all over the place. I had some great Thai food. I'll send you. I got a joint for you. And there was no thought that the Toronto Blue Jays would be playing in the American League Championship Series. And There was every thought and every betting thought that the Orioles would be. The Orioles hit five home runs on opening day. I paid to get in. Hump and Howie bought me beers and vodka. We had a great Canadian experience in the dome, eh? And then the next night, Luke went back. Things turned the other way, and the Orioles were never heard from again. And Vlad is chunky and he's failed and they give him the money or they don't have pitching and like all of these question marks about the Blue Jays that were there. And I know it was all raptored up and it was certainly leafed up at that time in late March. It was cold as hell. And to think that the Blue Jays have done this year, in this year when we can all admit there's been some Canadian-American tensions brought on by the dictator who's running our country right now, insulting your people, which is just you said sorry already. I mean, sorry times a billion from us. But I began the season in Canada, and I got to tell you, watching Getty behind home plate, and watching the whole Canadian thing. I was there when Carter hit the home run in '93. I was in the upper deck at the dome, and man, if you couldn't find a girl on Yonge Street that night as a young man, it was what it was, what a great night that was. But I would say all these years later, to see Canadian baseball, Toronto baseball, how nationally you mentioned Banff, Edmonton, Alberta, Quebec, they're all pulling for the Jays. The Jays are Canada's team.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned it. I saw a few people saying in the last few days, how much of a nightmare this is for Major League Baseball to have, these markets like Seattle, Milwaukee, and Toronto in the Final Four, as opposed to obviously New York and Boston, Chicago. Toronto actually has one of the largest fan bases in baseball. It just doesn't cater to Fox and ESPN and whatnot. But it's, we're talking a country of almost 40 million people that is all behind the Toronto Blue Jays. They're actually quite a huge brand and they bring in a lot of money. They just bring it in for Rogers and the folks up north of the border, but that's still attention on Major League Baseball regardless. So that matters, first of all. And that has been a more of a boon than people expect or would assume. The other thing is, you mentioned that kind of this kind of serendipitous nature of Canada versus USA in sports. I mean, there was the Four Nations Cup, which no American paid attention to until all of a sudden it was USA versus Canada in the final in hockey back in February. Canada beats them in overtime. That was like the most like F Trump moment in Canada for sports fans, because it's the only way we can really get that feeling. And Trump had tweeted his support or whatever, gone on his social media platform and whatnot. And then you come out and you beat the Yankees just after Trump visits the Yankees and does the flyover and all this stuff. And you beat them on their home soil at Yankee Stadium when they're the heavy favorite. It's been pretty amazing. And you mentioned how they were, widely expected to be a fifth place team this season. And Baltimore was widely expected to be a playoff team. And that is the beauty of baseball. You just never know. Vlad Guerrero doesn't even have a good year. Bo Bichette gets injured for the final month of the season. The pitching staff, the bullpen, not special. And yet they win 94 games and win the division. I mean, that's what we love about sports. It's what we love about baseball in particular, the unpredictability factor of it all. To take down the Yankees is great. There probably is a limit. They had a rough start to the next series against Seattle, but it kind of already feels like their World Series. I know a lot of folks say, if you're not first, you're last, but it's been a really memorable year. It's been a lot of fun to see them upset everybody, win the division, get through the Yankees in the ALDS. So at this point, I think it's all gravy for a lot of Toronto sports fans, and hopefully they can carry some of it into next year. But I do think Baltimore will be good next year. I think the Orioles had an off year, but I think that there's still the talent there, and I think it's going to be a really competitive AL East in 2026.
Brad Gagnon is my guest. Hey, tell everybody where to find you and whatnot. You're now like me in the meta world. You're a digital creator, and I used to be a sports radio guy. Then I was a radio entrepreneur and I owned a radio station and and that now it's just, oh, he's a podcaster. He's got a podcast. And I'm thinking anybody could have a podcast, but I mean, you're a columnist, you're a writer. I know you work with your brother. Your brother's had endeavors. You sort of are an international man of mystery at various points, but I know what a big sports fan and really kind of an historian you are for being a young Canadian chap.
I try to be. I think I made my career a fair bit on numbers and history. I kind of the stuff that bores a lot of folks. I spend more time on Pro Football Reference, diving in on StatHead into, I was last night or on Monday night when the Blue Jays were falling behind against Seattle. I was pulling up all the numbers on, how much they've struggled in the first couple games of ALCSs in the past and put together all these statistics. That's my passion. A lot of folks love those types of numbers. They love to see them presented in a way that really makes sense and kind of brings the storyline and the narrative together. The history too, that's big on me. I grew up with a dad who was one of those who just put it all on me from the age of like 5 or 6. Like, this is what happened to the Jays in the 80s. This is what happened to the Habs in the 1970s. As a Montreal Canadian fan, as my I'm a Gagnon. You can probably put that two and two together. So that's a big part of my history. Where I am now, yeah, it's, I have had already a few chapters. I've Bleacher Report all the way. I've always stayed with Bleacher Report. That's kind of been the bedrock of my career. Where, it's funny you mentioned podcaster. I get, oh yeah, this is my friend Brad. He's a blogger. Roll my eyes. Hey, all due respect to bloggers, I'm just not a blogger. I mean, a blogger by definition is one of those guys that throws up seven thoughts in like a 80 word unedited
It is
swirl and
amazing. I
throws it.
haven't heard the word blogger in years.
Yeah, thank God.
Well, I
Yeah,
was never
it's
accused to be. I mean, that I do a thing called columnists, right? Like a columnist. Columnist is now an old thing too, right? The
that's
newspaper
true.
columnist is like, what value would a columnist have? Oh, only insights, history, analysis that you're not going to
Yeah.
find from a blogger, quite frankly. No
Yeah.
offense to you bloggers or guys who deny being bloggers.
Yeah, I am. If I had to put a label on it, I am probably an NFL slash sports columnist. And usually with that historical or statistical bent or angle on my work so that I back it up with something, which has always been really important to me. But yeah, it's important to have range in this business. You know that as much as anyone, Nest. It's important to have a multitude of abilities, of strengths, of things you can do across the board. But Bleach Report has transformed so much in the 15 or so years I've been with the company that it started off with essentially those bloggers, those unpaid, unedited content that was frankly more so for clicks, and they would admit that because they've gone through this transition over the years where they finally started hiring bona fides and they started kind of adding to their resume and gaining a reputation for having a good editorial staff and whatnot. But it's gone from those 32 slide clickbait type things to deep dives where I wrote a mini book on the Buffalo Bills losing the Super Bowl to the Giants, on the Scott Norwood wide right. So I mean, we've had a chance to do so many different things, the writers at BR, especially in the NFL realm, that it's been great for me. I've had a chance to just do so much. The next thing is probably a book eventually. I think I want to tackle something. I just haven't figured out exactly what. And I don't think you start with, I want to write a book and then get the idea that you need the idea to just really hit you. And then you jump into the book. So I'm gonna figure that out. That's my quest for my 40s, which are only about 10 months away now.
Man, 39, 30. So you were born in 86,
86.
7, like that?
86, 86. Like
Yeah.
you, I don't think I look quite my age, just like you, Mr. Nestor.
Well, don't call, don't start calling me Unc. Not on my 57th birthday either, by the way.
I never guess.
What's that?
I would never guess.
Oh, well, you will when I start telling you I remember the 1972 A's and I remember the Habs of the 70s. I remember the Broad Street Bullies even before, in that era, the 76 USSR, 1980 Miracle on Ice. I was 12 years old at a Conway Twitty concert. It's a long story. It's about my mother.
I'm
So,
leaving
but
Canada.
Brad Gagnon is here. So I just want to stick to the Canadian thing and we can get into the political aspect of when I was up there for opening day that I sat with a young lady at a bar stool. Same bar you and I were at because I always go to the Keg for happy hour when I'm in Toronto because it's such a Canadian thing to do. And I had Rick Emmett on the show. Maybe this is why Getty won't come on the show because I'm American. I don't know. But the politics part of this that's baked into whatever it is on the Canadian side when I'm there. And it used to be more like light elbow, ha ha, you're American, we're Canadian. Maybe when Obama's running our country or when it's really a sports thing between, let's say, the Orioles and the Blue Jays, as it was in the end of the 1989 season when the Blue Jays beat the Orioles at Sky Dome, where it was just a baseball thing or a sports thing, or we all hate the Yankees thing, which we can all get on board with. But as a Canadian, when you're hearing the American leader talk about you as a 51st state and pissing on your country and for sport, Not for any tariffs, all of that. I found it really uncomfortable to pull my passport out at the border and roll in through Niagara Falls and roll into Toronto and look around and say, these people might not like me because I'm American. Like, what? What? And I'm thinking, you don't not want to like us, but like somebody's got to put this shit in check. You know what I mean? Like, seriously, because the people here haven't been able to do it in a week where we have the No Kings rally, and there's enough of us that feel so strongly about democracy and free speech and not being racist and just all of. I'm embarrassed by it, and I think you know that, and anyone who knows me on either side of any border would know that the kind of hate speech that that this country has taken on, and what's going on in Saudi Arabia, what's going on in Russia, it's been a real tragedy of my adulthood to go to Canada and sit on a bar and have people trash my country, and me say, I can't, it's indefensible the words that have come out of his mouth. And here, it's not funny, and it's divided families, relationships, businesses, every minute of every day, and whatever the uncivil war that's going on here. But from the outside, nobody here knows Canadian people to even pick their, like it's so insulated and almost xenophobic in some weird way that anytime I'm with any of you who weren't born here or don't live here currently, it worries me and it bothers me the way you're seeing it and how you may never see our place the same way again.
Yeah, and I think it's important for us as Canadians or any really anyone international to kind of compartmentalize where I think we still love Americans. These are all generalizations because there's many terrible Americans, there's many great Americans, there's many terrible Canadians, many great Canadians. But I think we still love Americans, but we don't like America right now. I think that's the big difference. And I think when you see these boos of the national anthem around the time of the tariffs becoming at a really hitting a pinnacle. It's not, of course, not an affront to any American, but I've never supported booing an anthem in either direction. It's happened in both directions many times over the years with Canada and the US, and usually it's somewhat playful, but a little, I would argue, crossing the line. Just the one time when I was like, you know what, maybe a statement needs to be made, right? And again, this isn't about you. This isn't about any individual. This is about policy in that case. That was the tariffs were really screwing with our country, and they were on and they were off, and they were impacting our economy and jobs and everything in this country. So that was only one of many things. You just mentioned there's a lot of stuff that actually impacts lives more deeply than tariffs even necessarily do, but that was the big one for Canadians, I think. So it's gone from, I like the analogy always of like that noisy neighbor, right? You live in an apartment, you have someone upstairs or downstairs, and they're really loud and they throw parties and they're frustrating and they annoy you. You don't hate them, but they piss you off. That was the United States during the first Trump presidency. It was for much of Bush's presidency. It was even, frankly, at times during, even though I'm clearly left leaning, during times of Democrats in office. Now it feels like the neighbor is starting fires. Right now it feels like the neighbor is burning the building down, and that's when it takes a different feel for us as Canadians. I think it's like, okay, now you've crossed the line. Now we got to get the police involved. Right now we're worried about our safety. We're worried about our well-being. We're worried about our ability to pay our bills. We're worried about our belongings, essentially, to stretch the analogy beyond its limits. So that's, I think, where we're at. And it's calmed a bit in terms of some of that. There's always these ebbs and flows, and you're just waiting for the next time that you're used as a scapegoat, essentially. As soon as the Trump, the sphere of Trump wants to send it back, wants to use Canada as a whipping boy again, he'll do it. It will do that. We'll be back in the spotlight, and then it goes over to the Middle East, and then it goes down to Mexico, and then it goes down to South America. It's just it's when you're caught in his crosshairs or not. And hopefully that's only for 3 more years. There's, we've heard talk of that being beyond 3 more years, and that scares the heck out of us as fans of democracy, I think, all over the world anyways. And it should frankly scare people who are even right leaning in the United States, because that is setting a precedent for something that would be bad for you in the future, because everything goes around that comes around goes around. So that's where we're at. I've tried to keep keep calm with a lot of it, but it has been very, very frustrating how it impacts a lot of Canadians' lives. And for some, for folks who say, you know, like, this has nothing to do with your country, why do you care? Well, as we've seen now, especially in the last year, it greatly impacts every country in the world, especially that neighbor living just below you that's trying to avoid the fire.
Yeah, and putting a Qatari military near Banff, I'm sure, is real comfortable too. Brad Gagnon joins me here. He is a Bleacher Report sports insider. He is in Brazil, of Canada, in Toronto. I actually called you to talk football, not politics or even baseball. And we can
Do
talk
that.
Geddy Lee anytime we want. You know what I mean? Now Russia's going on tour, so we can do that. But from your perspective, and you're the football guy, this 1-5 thing, I'd like to say it's about injuries and Lamar and this and that. There hasn't been a minute of this that's looked good since the third quarter against the Bills in any way. Defensively, how many points they've given up, where the injuries are, where the leadership's been, these players running back out the back door. I've been hitting hardball about that. And just the whole Justin Tucker scandal sort of getting brushed away. And that's about to come back because his suspension's going to end in a couple of weeks. And somebody's going to need a kicker, inevitably. And he's certainly one of the 32 best kickers in the world, if you can stomach the rest of it. But watching this from afar, and we talked about the Orioles' demise and meltdown. Dude, I've been watching the Ravens a long, long time and written books on the Ravens and stuff. The Orioles, maybe, and their new owner's just such a complete zero, that the Orioles' new owner. The Ravens always have it together. They always figure it out. They always get players. They're never 1-5. They never look uninspired. They never get their ass kicked at home. Our stadium is never emptied out. I mean, I see all these other stadiums empty out. I've been in them on the road and other places late in the game. Teams quit, fans quit. Hell, I go to Cleveland every year, right? I mean, I went to Cincinnati for years. No offense, Marvin, but I've seen stadiums empty out. Brad, dude, 30 years here from the Ray Lewis dance on, from when we stunk with Ted Marchabrode, and I had Marvin Lewis on this week talking about how they stunk and they got good and then they got great. And then 25 years later, there's Joe Flacco rings, Lamar Jackson, just all the way through. These are really perilous times for the football team here in what feels like a really shaky leadership period. And I'm wondering what the rest of the league's going to make of this as the schedule lightens up. Quarterbacks are, they're going to have some quarterbacks that maybe they don't have to rush so much. But I know one thing, they can't rush the quarterback. They haven't been able to stop the run. They've been injured. Down the list, all of it's been a really bad look.
Yeah, and you know, ordinarily injuries alone don't get you off the hook. A lot of teams are really injured right now. The Ravens defense has taken some hits, and that counts for something. Does it account for allowing 37 plus points in four of your six games? I don't think so. And that also, when you throw in that fact that the defensive play is like, how much better would they be with Lamar Jackson right now? They would be better than 1-5, safe to say, but I don't think they'd be running away with this division. There was a problem already. And I think the Jackson injury, combined with some of the injuries on defense in particular, have sort of masked that problem, have sort of made us focus on, well, of course, they lost their quarterback. Look what happened to Cincinnati when they lost their quarterback. Look what happened to Arizona with their quarterback. I understand that. That's fair, and it's part of the equation. But let's not let it cloud things too much, because this was a team that was developing a reputation for falling short against key opponents in big moments. That happened obviously in last year's playoffs against Buffalo. Then it happened again when they choked in week one against Buffalo. Then it happened in a primetime atmosphere against the Detroit Lions. They were already starting a trend, or actually continuing a trend, where there were some concerns there. And injuries did not explain that, because the Bills were as banged up as the Ravens in week one. The Lions have lost five of their top six cornerbacks. Those two teams took out Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson goes down, of course. Now it's exacerbated everything. Now you've got a problem on your hands. Now you've lost four straight games. You're 1-5. You've turned the ball over eight times in the last four games, three games. And you're not getting takeaways on defense. And you're not, the defense isn't overcoming, isn't making up for that. That's something the Ravens are used to happening in the past. Well, one unit will lift the other unit up. That's not happening right now. The bye couldn't be coming at a better time. I think we can agree on that. Now, if, you know, you get Lamar back, you've got the Bears at home on the other side of the bye. You get a victory there, then you've got Miami, you've got Cleveland a couple of weeks after that. You mentioned the schedule to soften up. It's not over. I don't think it's
Well, it
over at
doesn't
all. I think it's
soften
supposed
up
to
because
be
it's Bears Dolphins in 4 days once this thing comes back. I don't think a lot of fans really like looked at that and said, wow. So whoever you don't have on Sunday, you might not have on Thursday. Whoever you have on Sunday, you might lose some guys you won't have. I mean,
That's
I
fair.
have said this week, while I have annihilated the Ravens for their lack of accountability across the board. It's such a bad look. I used to be on the inside of it. I'm now on the outside. I watch it. Just all of it is gross to me, all the way around, including the record, including the stadium being empty. Just down the line, just all the optics stink about it. But I think they're going to be 7-7. You know what I mean? Like, I think they're going to win some games here. They're going to pick up some ground. They're going to beat some bad teams. Lamar's going to run around and go in the phone booth. Derrick Henry's going to grind. But I don't know how they're going to do it with this offensive line without Ronnie Stanley. I don't know how they're going to do it with the defensive front seven if Roquan Smith's not going to be an elite player and they're not going to have any elite anything anywhere else in that front seven. And certainly, if Marlon Humphrey's old and no good and the young guys, the Wiggins and the Starks, they can't do it, this could really get off the rails and go 4-13 really bad if Lamar can't play, or if they can't run the ball, or Henry looks old for real, which I've never seen him look old, and he's my favorite player, but and he actually stands up at his locker like he has good parents, like literally, like a nice Canadian boy would,
Yeah.
after losing a Stanley Cup, where I've been in those locker rooms. Nobody runs because like Canadians kids come from farms and have parents and have accountability and they play on a team and you just don't do that. You just don't. So
Yeah.
nonetheless, but around here, oh, it's commonplace. I mean, it's just accountability's optional for this franchise. And that, and that alone bothers me. And at 1-5, it bothers me more. But I'll tell you what, and this isn't my purple heart or me being a homer for them, I do think they'll be 7-7 because I think the franchise has had this resiliency that I can't deny being in it, but I don't know where it's going to come from this time. I don't know where the heroes and the saviors are coming from on the lines. The offensive and defensive lines are no good.
Yeah, and that's at times been the bread and butter, right? That has complemented what Lamar Jackson does. And the other thing for me is, you just mentioned, they absolutely can bounce back here. They can get back to, as you mentioned, kind of that 7-7 area. That gets you into a wild card conversation. The biggest concerns there, and I pulled up the schedule, is that when you're in that position, then you have New England in week 16. Okay, winnable, but they're better than they have been in recent years. Then you're in Green Bay and in Pittsburgh to finish the season.
In Green
So
Bay and
week.
in Pittsburgh in cold weather, they've never done well in cold weather. And that's a
And
Lamar thing, that's a Florida thing. I don't know, it's the way they're built.
that's where we circle back to that original point, is how do they perform in big games? How do they perform when it really matters? Now all of a sudden, oh wait, they're healthy again. Oh wait, they've rebounded. They've done all this work to get back on track. Well, now we're back to the original problem that they have to tackle. Oh, maybe this is the year to do it. Maybe all these distractions overcoming this. Maybe this is finally the year where they take out Green Bay and Pittsburgh. They go to the playoffs. They have to play a wild card game. They don't get any home games because they've already lost all that because of what they've gone through in September and October. But now all of a sudden they overcome. Whereas it looked like they had it all lined up for them in 2023 and 2024. You never know. You never know. The Toronto Blue Jays are an ALCS team. So you just, that's the beauty of sports. But I wouldn't bet on it.
Brad Gagnon wants to write Purple Rain 3 for me, with the Ravens going out to Santa Clara. You know what? I did joke about this because I was in LA a couple weeks ago. I've been doing bucket list stuff the last 6 weeks. I mean,
Awesome.
it's been a gift to me that Chad Steele threw me out during this period of time. It's been a gift to them too that they don't have me holding them accountable, but I'm holding them accountable. They're just running from me, and everybody else apparently. And I was driving through the near the airport, and I had an old girlfriend in El Segundo, and I love Manhattan Beach, and I'm driving through there, and there's the Chargers facility, and I'm realizing, oh, I can text Jim Harbaugh, I can text Joe Ortiz and Chad Alexander's and my guy, all the Chargers guys out there, and I'm thinking to myself, I looked at Jen, I'm like, if the Ravens are going to piss the season away, I mean, they were already would have 1-2 when I got there or whatever. And I'm like, if they're going to piss the season away, at least if they play playoff games, this would be a great place to come and play because they can win here. They can win in LA. And I've gone from Could the championship game be in LA for Harbaugh? That would help him. And how do we keep him out of Buffalo? How do you keep him out of Kansas City? Well, Buffalo's losing. Kansas City, I mean, all of these things line up for them to have the kind of season that they want to have. And it's sort of Pittsburgh running away, right? And that's the weirdest part is that Tomlin, Steelers, tradition, all of that. You look up in a year where you're 1-5 and looking at how they've played with their 40-something-year-old peyote-taking mushroom sniffing quarterback. Things have really worked out in that Pittsburgh thing in a way that I don't know. I wouldn't have bet on that, and I wouldn't bet against the Ravens beating them twice later in the year. But it is a really, really strange time for the division, I think, for the conference, and wondering where Buffalo and Kansas City really are as far as being complete teams. And who's coming and getting any of these, Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen's anyway? Maybe it's the Chargers, maybe it's the Steelers. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a weird year. So on one hand, the pessimist would say that it's a shame the Ravens aren't great this year so far because it's wide open, more open than ever. The Chiefs are off to an awful start. The Chargers started hot and have really cooled off. Offensive line injuries being a huge factor there as well. The Colts, does anyone really fully believe in the Colts yet? I don't know if we'd see Daniel Jones leading a deep playoff drive. And the Steelers, as much as they're built well, and they're strong in the trenches, which is the old Steeler way. They've got a great defensive line, and obviously they've actually come together really nicely in the offensive line now. I don't know if anyone believes that Aaron Rodgers at 41 is going to sustain this. The Bills have lost back-to-back games, so it is wide open. But that also means that there was a little bit of leeway for you to have this. Oh, we lost Lamar for a few games. Oh, our defense is banged up, and we've lost Ronnie Stanley, and we didn't have Isaiah Likely off the bat, and all these things. This is the one year where you can afford that. So that's the glass half full Canadian Brazilian maybe perspective for you, but it's still going to be a battle. I think you're going to be in a position where Kansas City probably does rebound. They have already to an extent. They're going to be there like they always are. Cincinnati at least is out of the way in the division realistically, and Cleveland. So it is down to Pittsburgh. I think the Ravens are still a much better team than Pittsburgh when it comes to it. Big gap to make up, a lot of time. You got the extra game with 17 now. You still play them twice, like you mentioned. So I'll give you more glass half full. I still think the Bills are the team to beat. I still fear Baltimore having to play Buffalo, especially at Orchard Park, in what would possibly be the final game at that stadium in Buffalo. In a scenario like that, it scares me. No matter how healthy you are, even if Lamar's back, even if everyone's going healthy besides obviously Stanley. So I just don't. I don't know. I don't believe in them because of the way they perform in big games. But I've not believed in a lot of sports teams over the years because of their big game inabilities. And eventually, they've pierced through, and sometimes pierced through from gap, from holes as large as 1 in 5.
Well, I did the math on this the other day, and my math really wasn't very good. They go 6-2 the next eight. I mean, I think they can do that, but they need to be better in the trenches. Brad Gagnon is here. He covers the National Football League internationally from Toronto via Santos, Brazil. He's at a Bleacher Report. He's my Toronto drinking buddy and a travel companion, noodle eating travel companion as well. Anything else that that you want to add in regard to the Baltimore situation here? Because I know you're a baseball guy as well. I always say from the Toronto perspective for me, of all of the sports, and you guys have had a Raptors parade, you've had Blue Jays parades. I mean, the Blue Jays could come back this week and could have another parade in a couple of weeks as well. There would be nothing on this continent. Maybe Mexico winning a World Cup would be like, Mexico winning a World Cup, the Maple Leafs winning a Stanley Cup. I'm just trying to think of things that would be. I mean, we've seen the Cubs win. We've seen Cleveland win. We've won here, Kansas City, these other small burgs, and doing things like that. From a fan base perspective, for a parade or for a civic celebration, I know you're not a Leafs fan because I've spent time with you, but like, I often think about like the Baltimore Oriole parade feels so far away from me. The Raven parades I've seen and experienced or whatever. I feel for the Toronto people that the Leafs aren't good. I know you beat on them though, right?
beaten them, but I have a lot of friends and family who are diehards. And you know, if the Habs, my team, are out of the picture, I'm not one of those haters. Like, I'm okay with them winning. I want to see them win if the Habs don't. They lost Mitch Marner, their best winger, in the offseason, went to Vegas. They're still, you know, they're in the picture of one of those top five or six teams that are a contender for the Stanley Cup this year. It absolutely could happen. You see teams again all the time lose one of their stars and then all of a sudden come out better on the other end. So entirely possible. We get that. It's been, oh gosh, almost 60, 59 years now. 49 for the Mariners, by the way. Since they're an expansion franchise, 105 combined for the Mariners and Brewers if they meet in the World Series. But Leafs are almost 60 years without a cup. Jays now 30 or so years without a World Series. They got the Raptors here. That salvaged things a little bit in 2019. But you know, I was chatting with my dad the other day, and Toronto sports, if you lump Buffalo in, which the Bills are absolutely a Toronto team the way that Torontonians view it, they fill up with like a quarter of that stadium, you know. Between the Bills going all for four and four straight Super Bowls, the Leafs going almost 60 years without a cup, and the Blue Jays now in a 30-year or so drought where they've only actually won a handful of playoff games practically in that span. Toronto's up there for cursed sports cities. I know everyone thinks their sports city is cursed. I think Atlanta and Minneapolis have claims. Baltimore, you know, I think when you if you, you include that corridor between DC and Baltimore, has had some nice wins too over the years, but boy, do they ever want a championship. The Raptors were special, but I think to get something from the Leafs or Jays in the coming years, that would be, you're right. In terms of parades, in terms of, I think they parade across the country in different, you know, different size parades across the country for either of those teams winning, especially the Jays, because they become the national team in lieu of the, unfortunately, the Expos being long gone at this point. So we'll see. We'll see. Hold on. But nowadays, it's the thing about sports, man. When we were, you know, when you were a kid, go back to that age difference, when you were a young man, there weren't 32 teams in all these leagues. Now you're only supposed to win a couple in your entire lifetime, and many folks are going to go 70, 80, 90 years without getting one. That's the frustration and the beauty of sports in this era.
Lamar promised us a Super Bowl here, and I believe that. And I'm waiting for that to happen. And at 1-5, it's tough. Brad Gagnon can be found out at Bleacher Report. He is my Canadian dude. I'm glad I found you. I'm glad you had a Santos internet hookup. Tell everybody about Santos of Brazil and why I should take your advice and come down there and take advantage. I just did the exchange rate. It looks like it would be a really affordable little endeavor to meet for me to come down to Brazil right now.
There you go. You know, the beauty of it is, so my partner is Brazilian, and so her family's from São Paulo. I've always been a big fan. I'm a big traveler, as you mentioned as well, and I don't love winter. I don't love Canadian winter, and I do work a remote job, as you know. So I was looking for a spot, and I thought, okay, what's in the Eastern time zone ish? What is warm and beautiful and has beaches and bikinis, and what is a direct flight to Toronto, and the answer to that question is São Paulo. São Paulo itself is, you know, a little bit inland. It's not on the beach. So okay, now let's take the next step. And what's the nearest city that's on a beach that's relatively safe, which Santos is. And so I'm probably the only gringo in this that lives in this entire city. There's very few of us. I'm learning Portuguese is a damn tough language, but
Oh man,
yeah,
it's
I have
nothing
my
like
friends
Spanish
who.
either. They told me it was like Spanish, and we got off the plane in Rio and got in the cab, and I realized Spanish is not Portuguese.
It's a whole different ball game with those verbs, man. So I'll get there, and hopefully I'll get you down here, and I'll give you a little Portuguese lesson. We can have some vinho and some cervejas down here with my partner and my bring Jen down as well, hopefully.
Well, I spent 10 days in Brazil and in Argentina in 2006. We flew to Rio to see the Rolling Stones, and we did Corcovado and did all of that and the favelas and just
Fantastic.
all the stuff there. And then we went to São Paulo and we saw U2 at Morumbi at the National Stadium up in the hillside, built into a neighborhood. There's no parking. There's 150,000 seats. And when the aircraft goes up in São Paulo, and you're taking off or landing, and this would be advice to anyone who's ever traveled anywhere in the world. And I've been to Tokyo, I've been to these, New York's this way, LA's a sprawl, it's not up in the same way. But when you take off in São Paulo, Brazil, and you look down and you see the vastness of the humanity of it. It looks like a fake video of there's just no way that many people can be living in one area. And it's just it's an amazing thing, and I love my time in São Paulo. I like the beer, I like the girls, I like the beach. I like the I had people trying to talk me into going to Florianopolis and all of the doing all of the beach coaches coasts down there because I'm a beach guy. So, dude, don't tempt me to come down to Brazil. Now, I'm not going to learn any. I don't need. I learned this when I was in Korea. I have Google Translate. I can speak and talk because I did not speak any Korean when I was in Seoul. I promise you, I had a lot of Seoul. I also had a lot of barbecue, but I did not, and a lot of soju, but I did not have any Korean. But with Google Translate now, I feel like I could come back and I could be a better Brazilian. You know what I mean?
Well, between the phone and the human translator that I often have with me, for free of charge, by the way, it's I get by down here. And yeah, you mentioned it is breathtaking. This is the largest city in the world outside of Asia. And so it really does blow your mind when you're flying in and you see just how vast it is. It never ends. So that alone
I'd like to
is
say that I saw
mind-blowing.
Beijing when I flew in, but it was too smoggy.
Right. It's true. So it's the largest city in the world that you can actually see while approaching in an airplane.
There you go. There you go. And that, let's hear it for not pumping diesel gas and being fossil fuel free. My man Brad Gagnon is here. He is my leftist Canadian friend, part of the Antifa movement here, because like, who wants fascism in their world, right? I mean, I don't need any of that. My people are Venezuela. That's why my people left that place. He's down in Brazil. I would say this, obrigado. Is that good? Can I get that?
Obrigado.
All right. See, I got that right. And thanks, A, you hoser. Brad Gagnon, my Canadian friend, still pulling for the Blue Jays to turn it around. Never the Leafs, always the Habs because he's a Gagnon. And you know what? If the Nordiques come back, I'm adopting them because they have good-looking jerseys. We're doing bye week around here. I am giving out a crab cake tour scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery. I'll have Raven scratch-offs. Hopefully, the season turns around because one in as much as John Harbaugh thinks I hate him and his football team, 1-5 is no fun. I've been trying to tell these hosers that run these teams, like, you think I get on the radio? You think I hate the local teams? What's wrong with you, freaking people? Like, fix yourselves. Win some games, get healthy, take some accountability, pick better humans, get some Canadians on your team like Brent Urban. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, always feeding the spirit of radio. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us. Test for echo.